Rob, the waters are receding, but the emotional ups and downs have already begun. What kind of emotions are people likely to experience from a flood of this nature?
Well, look, the first thing, Sian, is that when the disaster is unfolding, people adapt to that by going into what we call a state of heightened arousal. We've got mechanisms in our brain that just switch us on to deal with the threat. And the more dangerous and unusual that threat is, doesn't just have to be dangerous, but if it's unusual, then we become very focused on exactly what we need to deal with to survive. And this is what I call the survival state. And that remains in place pretty much as long as there is either danger or disruption or things are highly unusual. And while people are in that state, they're kind of specialised for survival. So what we tend to do is have very simple and cut down emotions. We might get very upset, but often people don't have much in the way of feeling because they're all action. And so a lot of the emotional reaction becomes postponed until people come out of that state.
So they're really running on adrenaline.
That's right. And what adrenaline does is shut down the feedback system to ourselves so that we can devote all our attention to what's going on around us outside of ourselves. So the important thing here is as soon as things are safe and stable, people need to try and get themselves down out of that state. In some ways, it's tempting to stay in it and rush around and do things. But I can tell you I've talked to flood-affected farmers who 2 years later said when they looked back, they realised that everything they did for the first 2 or 3 months on adrenaline was poorly thought out and more or less a waste of time. Because the thing is, when you're in that adrenaline state, you can only think in a way that's good for dealing with immediate physical situations. That's what adrenaline does in our brain. It specialises us to deal with a physical threat. But actually, to get a business going or a farm or even a household, you've got to sit back and plan and work out priorities and develop a strategy. And you can't do that very well in adrenaline. You just rush at the first thing you see. So it's very important that people try to settle down and think and try and involve, if possible, someone who's not in that state, a friend or relative who wasn't so affected. Maybe, you know, sometimes people have said it's wonderful to have someone come maybe a week or two down the track and come and stay with them for a while and just help them kind of work out a plan of how they're going to deal with it, someone who's not in that adrenaline mode.
So possibly for people that are listening in Carnarvon and the Gascoyne area at the moment, maybe organising a family or a friend member who's in another part of the country or to come and stay with them for a little bit and sit down and do the practical things like making the lists about what they've got
yes.
to do.
Yes, and look, there are the thing that nobody outside the disaster area understands is that a natural disaster disrupts simultaneously every aspect of one's life. And it's not even just those who have got water in their property, but even those who live in the community that weren't flooded. I'm not sure whether that's the case in those areas, but certainly in Victoria we often have a mixture of flood-affected and other houses on slightly higher ground. Now, you know, there is research from the United States from a huge flood that showed it took twice as long for those people who lived in flooded areas but were not flooded to regain their positive feelings after the flood as those who are affected. When you look at negative feelings, it's the other way around. It took twice as long for those who'd suffered property damage to lose the negative feelings. So it's a complicated situation, and it's not obvious. It's very there are lots of different factors involved here, but we've got to understand the whole community is caught up in these events, and this element of disruption is very disorganising to people because they often feel there is no one thing I can just depend on to give me my sort of anchor point where I can start to work on what to do next.
Now, you did touch on that idea of community. There is a real sense of community during these situations or this situation. Does that help people knowing that others are going through the same thing?
Yes, it does. It's a very important time when, and most people pull together with each other and just do whatever they need to do to help each other through. Now, however, there's a bit of a danger in that. While it appears very positive, and it is very positive to give that immediate help, there is a tendency for people to throw their houses open, to invite people in, to put them up, and to have people living in very unusual situations and combinations, and everyone mucks in together. Now, one of the effects of that is to break down the normal personal boundaries between people, between families, and so everyone gets mixed in together. So two things tend to follow that. There is what we call emotional contagion. Everyone being so closely involved, there's a strong tendency for emotion to be transmitted before it can be thought about. And that then will often translate into rumours and myths circulating. And we've certainly noticed that in the bushfires here, that rumours circulate in these highly charged communities, which are without any foundation at all, but really are quite upsetting and confusing to people. So I really emphasise for people to just try and not respond. It's hard when you're in adrenaline because you're so close. The second thing is that when everyone is so close and communicating so much, there's a tendency for things to get a little bit stereotyped. And then people feel that, you know, it's only those who've had the most significant damage who really we should be worrying about. And what are you worried about? You only lost this, and somebody else lost that, and so on. And that tendency to line things up on a sort of straight line where you've got the worst at one end and the least at another. But we know it's not like that because property and houses mean different things to different people. You know, you might have somebody who's got a brand new house, it's well insured. You know, we had that with the bushfires. And burns down, and then, you know, they can get a good insurance payment and they'll build a new one and they're pretty soon back to normal. Whereas you have somebody else who has a little old cottage that belonged to the family for four generations, is full of antiques, burns down, they've lost their history. They can never be replaced. So, you know, a house is not just a house. It's different for everyone. So really we need to make sure that there is plenty of opportunity for people to speak about their own personal experience and think about what it means. And to do that, we have to have a little bit of privacy, a little bit of time for families to get together, for very important for parents to give children the opportunity to stop and think and talk about it. And parents often have no idea what's going through the minds of children until they create these little spaces. And I could give stories of families I've worked with who, you know, found that 6, 12, 18 months later they had problems and that there were things that the children had just never told them because basically no one had any time to stop and listen.
Summing up, we're just running out of time, Rob, which is really unfortunate because this is you're giving us such fantastic information, but it's important to try and take care of yourself and understand how you're feeling and be okay with that.
Yes, and try and just create little spaces where you can come out of this adrenaline mode, settle down, have a bit of private time to yourself, calm down, and then take your time to think it out, and then people recover better.
Rob, thank you so much for your time this evening. We really do appreciate it. You've given us some wonderful advice.
Well, I give my sympathies to the people there. It's a long, hard trip, but people do get through it.